When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The New Statesman.
Hi, I'm Anoush, and this is The New Statesman's twice-weekly politics podcast. In this episode, we'll be analysing the result of the SNP leadership election with our Scotland editor, Chris Deeren. Thanks so much for joining us, Chris.
Afternoon.
Barely an hour's passed since the result was announced, but you've already written two pieces about it already. So thanks for squeezing us in. So for our listeners who don't know, Hamza Yousaf narrowly defeated Kate Forbes with 52.1% of the vote to her 47.9%. What do you make of that result, Chris?
I think that Hamza Yousaf will be relieved that he has squeezed through. I think given the way the campaign went and the sheer might of the party machine that was thrown behind Yousaf, John Swinney, Down, all came out publicly, cabinet ministers came out publicly for Yousaf. Very few people in the government came out for Kate Forbes. You would think in that kind of situation that the preferred candidate would romp home. He certainly hasn't done that. It was a bit of a Brexit result in the end, wasn't it? 52-48.
Yeah.
A settled will. Indeed, it's something that they will have to come to terms with. We discovered over the course of the campaign that the SNP was much more divided, I think, than many of us had realised, and that there had been much more unhappiness, perhaps, with certainly the latter period of the Sturgeon government than had been evident. And I think that's what's played out in the result here, that Forbes, especially after her very difficult first week when her socially conservative views threatened to derail her campaign, was able to come really within a few thousand votes of winning, tells you that there is something at the heart of the SNP that needs addressed. Looking at the figures, I think almost two-thirds of SNP members didn't vote for Hamza Yousaf, which is quite a large amount. Now, that's everybody who's a member, not just those who voted. There were clearly plenty who weren't inspired by any candidate to vote, but also Hamza Yousaf didn't manage to inspire the party to come out and give him an overwhelming mandate. The other thing, of course, is that not just among members, but among the wider electorate, Forbes was by far the preferred candidate in every poll that was taken. She was getting sort of 30% support to 20% for Hamza Yousaf. You know, there's a job that he has to do now, two jobs. One is to persuade the recalcitrant members of his party that he is the right man for the job. And the second and more important part, really, is to persuade the electorate that he's up to it. Because I think the word I'm using to describe the general mood of the electorate when it comes to Hamza Yousaf is nonplussed. I think they've had a look. They haven't been particularly impressed. And the SNP have, I wouldn't say foisted, he's the one that was promoted as the chosen one, the anointed one. And lots of people, as the result shows, haven't bought into that. So he now has to prove to the electorate, as well as the SNP, that he was worthy of that backing by what he now does as First Minister.
That's really interesting. It's interesting that you calculate that about a third of the party membership didn't actually choose him. And I just wonder whether you were able to get a read on what members were thinking in the run-up to this election, because unlike the Tory leadership contest that we had in England last summer, there weren't those party membership polls that could give you a steer on what members were thinking.
It was very difficult for that very reason, Anoush. Very hard to get any kind of scientific view of what members were thinking. But I guess we can look at this and say that there were those who wanted to put the foot down on independence, which is maybe where Ash Regan got her support, the kind of more ALBA, Alex Salmond supporting, more extreme wing of the SNP. And then the remainder, you would look at the Forbes support as being members who felt that the SNP did need to change in government, that the sort of Sturgeon approach to government and winning independence had run its course. She was the one who obviously described what the SNP had done in government so far as mediocre. She was probably the one who talked most openly about maybe a more patient approach to winning independence, about reaching out and winning over soft no voters, which the polls suggested she would have been more in a position to do. And Hamza Yousaf himself described his candidacy as the continuity candidacy. So there were obviously a fair number of people who felt that they should carry on roughly as they were. It was interesting in his acceptance speech today that he talked about governing for all of Scotland and the SNP being one family. But also in terms of the priorities he would choose as First Minister, he talked about reforming the NHS. He's been Health Secretary for a few years now, not particularly rated, I think, by those in the NHS that I've spoken to, but the people in the NHS desperately want a period of thought and then reform. And if he lives up to that, maybe that's a job for Kate Forbes now, you know, big reform-minded brain to be given a difficult job, which is always a clever thing to do to your opponents. But also let her prove herself a public service job and perhaps win the SNP support for actually making some genuine reforms to public services. He talked about small business. He talked about childcare. He talked about more powerful local government. These are all things that my think tank Reform Scotland are very keen on. I genuinely wish him well. And he's the only game in town for the next few years. If he delivers on this stuff, then I think he has a chance of showing that this is, in a sense, a renewal of government within the SNP, that they are going to take a different approach to things. He said they would try to govern well to persuade those who are unpersuaded by independence that they can do it. But he also said he was going to put the independence campaign into fifth gear, to use his phrase. Now, whether you can govern well and persuade people, which will take a period of time, while having the independence campaign in fifth gear, I'm not sure you can do both at once. So there'll be proof in the pudding on a lot of that about what he chooses to prioritise. Is it more of the Sturgeon full on running at the barricades on independence? There'll be a referendum next year, nor there'll be one next year, nor there'll be one next year. Mm-hmm. Or is it going to be, we need to slow down a bit because we're not persuading no voters at the moment above 45 to 50% support for independence. If that strategy under Sturgeon, who was very popular and successful, didn't work, I'm not sure it would work under Hamza Yousaf, who is far less popular and successful so far anyway. So it'll be interesting to see how he manages that, how he manages the splits in his own party, and how he governs as First Minister. Is he up to it? Does he have the capacity to be a reforming First Minister, a renewer of his party in government? We know that both New Labour and even the Tories before that weren't able to renew themselves in government. It's very difficult when you've been in government for a long time to find new energy, new ideas, and re-inspire the electorate to think that you're the guys. But that's his job now. So he will have to do, I guess, what Gordon Brown and John Major couldn't, and find a way to reconnect with voters and find that energy that was there in the early days. That's a hell of a challenge.
Yeah, definitely. And what's interesting is you mentioned the divisions within the party, and I wonder what you thought that the leadership campaign taught you about the health of the SNP as a party, because it was a very fractious campaign, wasn't it? You mentioned Kate Forbes's opinions on sex and other sort of social issues coming up in her interviews about her faith, Hamza Yousaf's own gaffes, and the resignation of Nicola Sturgeon's husband, Peter Morrill, who was the party's chief executive over the bogus membership figures. And there were many other top figures who were quitting from their posts as well. What did it tell you about the sort of health of the party? Because they've long had a reputation, in England at least, as this party of discipline, sticking to the party line, and also an election-winning machine as well, up until recently.
The membership figures were, in a sense, the most interesting thing to come out during the campaign, partly because they tried so hard to not release them. If you're looking at the 2014-2015, after the independence referendum, it was claimed they were as high as 120,000, which was a huge influx of new people into the SNP, and it's now emerged there's 72,000 members. Now, that's some drop-off in a relatively short period of time. I think we don't really know yet which members have left and which have stayed. My instinct would be that the long-term membership have probably stayed. The people who've been members for 20 or 30 years, you probably just stick with the programme. Maybe a lot of the younger members who came in have either lost interest or moved on to other things, but we don't really know that. But it is clear that enthusiasm for the SNP at an activist level is not where it once was, which I think makes it any campaign that's coming up. We've got a general election next year, we've got Holyrood election in 2026. Having the ground forces and the enthusiasm of the parts of the electorate for you is something that you have to, if you build it, you have to try and keep it. So it's been interesting to detect that there is that quite substantial fall off in support amongst SNP members. I suppose the other thing we've seen is what an incredible conjuring job Nicola Sturgeon did over her 8 years, because the divisions that have emerged, we always knew that the SNP in terms of its membership, was quite a broad church. The one thing that everyone agreed on was independence, and that's why we had the Huisht for Ind slogan, which was going around as in shut up for independence. Don't criticise the government on the basis of policies you don't agree with, because all that matters in the end is securing independence. And Sturgeon, I think through winning all the elections she did, as she likes to tell us, and also the force of her charisma and personality, her personal popularity among the electorate, had kind of won the right to demand that support. We're nearly there, just stick with us, don't worry about the policies, well, it's all about getting over the line on independence. Without someone of Sturgeon's talents and charisma and authority, what happens to that Huisht for Inde idea? After 8 years of Sturgeon, there's still not much forward on winning majority support for independence. Is Humza Yousaf the man to deliver that where Nicola Sturgeon couldn't? We could certainly entertain doubts about that. Are the public looking at the SNP now and seeing those splits so vividly displayed over the past 4 or 5 weeks? Are they now looking at the SNP as they often look at divided parties and think, I'm just not so sure that you are any more the outfit that I thought you were? Are you capable of governing as a united party when you disagree on so much, including gender and the way we go about securing independence, whether there should be energetic reform of public services like education and health? Have you just been in government too long? Is it time for someone else to get to have a go? So those are the kind of questions that have been raised by this campaign, if they hadn't been raised before, and it'll be up to Humza Yousaf to answer them and to prove that he can deliver that. So I think that's what we'll learn. The party is divided. Without a charismatic and controlling leader, those divisions will be quite easily displayed. There's been a big public rebellion, so will those voices go quiet now that someone has been declared the winner? And what does it do now that first flush of incredibly enthusiastic new members has gone, and it's down to still a quite substantial 72,000, but it's not 120,000, whatever it was before.
After the break, we'll talk about what the SNP's new leader means for Scotland's political future and what's in their in-tray. If you're subscribed to The New Statesman, you can get all our episodes ad-free on the New Statesman app. You can get it on both iOS and Android. Just search for New Statesman on the App Store or Google Play Store. We'll be back in a few minutes.
If you enjoy The New Statesman podcast, then you'll love our daily politics newsletter, Morning Call. It's a quick, essential guide to the big political story each morning by me, Freddie Hayward and Rachel Wearmouth, featuring original reporting from Westminster and beyond, our analysis of the latest political news, and some recommendations of the best reads of the day. Sign up for free at the link in the podcast description.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So you mentioned a bit about what you would like to see Yousaf's priorities as leader. What do you think he will go to first, knowing the kind of politician that he is?
Well, he's talked a lot in the campaign about childcare, expanding right to childcare, which is not cheap and there's not a lot of money around. So there is the question of how he's going to fund that and where he would take the money from. One of the problems in Scotland is that the economy, as with the rest of the UK, has been bumping along the bottom. So revenues are not particularly high. They're having to make quite hard decisions across different budgets. So you'd have to take the money from somewhere else to deliver that childcare policy. He's going to have to make a decision relatively quickly on the gender reform bill or act as to whether to pursue that all the way to the Supreme Court, the British government announcing the Section 35 order, which meant the act couldn't get royal consent. So is he going to, as Nicola Sturgeon wanted to, continue that battle all the way to the Supreme Court? If they lose, what does that mean? Does he, if he knows they're probably going to lose, which is, I think, what most people would expect, is he still going to risk his new political capital on something like that, which has so divided his party, both before and during this leadership contest? Or is he going to find a way to park that? Is he going to find a way to bring it back to Holyrood and perhaps work out a compromise that might be more acceptable to both sides of the debate? Cost of living is unavoidably a priority just now, and he mentioned that in his acceptance speech. But what does that mean? What does tackling cost of living mean? Does it mean trying to get growth in the economy? He wants to keep the Greens in government. The Greens are mortally opposed to economic growth. They would have walked out, I think, had Kate Forbes won, because she's in favour of economic growth in order to fund public services and tackle poverty. But she's not First Minister. So How does he go about doing that thing? I don't think he's shown a huge amount of interest in the private sector and business and the rest over his 10-year ministerial career so far. So I don't really know what to expect from him on that front. The Sturgeon approach to all of this was simply to carve out money and push it towards underprivileged groups, which is fine, but at a certain point you run out of money to do that if you're not growing the economy and bringing more in. So I think he'll probably want to reunite his party by showing a degree of balance, that he understands the need for renewal and a fresh approach to government. He only took, and maybe NHS reform as a way to do that. I think potentially he's talked about a national conversation, which is one of those terrible political phrases, but would be looking again at the NHS and trying to find reforms that would allow it to perform better within the free at the point of use demand. So if he does that, what's that going to look like? How long is that going to take? What impact does it have on support for independence? And so cost of living, NHS reform, a choice on gender, and also a decision on the nature of the independence campaign, which I think perhaps a lot of people in Scotland it's been white noise to them for a long time. It's been unending in the background and kind of wearying if you're not an SNP or an independence supporter. Does he take the foot off the pedal? Does he change the nature of the conversation? Or is it just more of the same? In which case, I think the recent decline in support for the SNP and support for independence could become something that continues. And certainly the Labour Party in Scotland are not impressed by Hamza Yousaf, were hoping he would win because they thought he was the weakest of the two main candidates, and are hoping to make serious inroads into the SNP seats at Westminster in the next general election.
Oh, well, that was going to be my next question for you. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because Labour is trying to spin this as a sort of boost for them. Do you think that's correct, that that's the right calculation that they've made there?
It remains to be seen. There's no point writing someone off just because you were unconvinced by them during the campaign. Will Hamza Yousaf grow into the job? We'll know that relatively quickly. Nicola Sturgeon certainly did. She was quite shy and introverted and became this very impressive, substantial figure. I think Hamza Yousaf has to do something similar. I don't think he particularly looked like a first minister in waiting during the campaign. And the result today, lots of people didn't think that he necessarily had what it took. So he now has to show that he has the shoulders for this big job and can put the majority of Scots behind him for a period at least. The Labour Party are doubtful that he has that in him. And they were already looking, I think, with the decline in SNP support to the general election, whether it's next spring or autumn, as a way to win back maybe as many as 20 of Scotland's 59 Westminster seats, which would put them in touching distance of the SNP. I think the SNP would still be the largest Scottish party at Westminster, but there wouldn't be all that much in it. Mm. And the idea is then, of course, that that provides a springboard to the next Holyrood election in 2026, and Labour would hope to be in government at Westminster by that time, and selling a message of a Labour government in Holyrood and a Labour government in Westminster would be able to work in harmony to really drive Scotland's interests forward, as opposed to what we've had, which has been quite an oppositional relationship between SNP in Edinburgh and the Conservatives in London. Labour definitely see this as an opportunity. Part of it depends on how Hamza Yousaf now performs in the weeks and months ahead. I don't think he'll get much of a honeymoon because there wasn't huge public enthusiasm for him. I don't think he'll get the benefit of the doubt for too long. If he avoids making some of the harder decisions early on, then I think people will be persuaded that he was what they thought he might be all along. If he seemed to be a puppet of the Sturgeonites, if you like, which is what some people painted him as during the competition, then that again will not play in his favour. He's got to be his own man. He's got to do some things differently. It's got to feel like a change, and he's got to have some successes quite early on. Otherwise, I think this decline of the SNP, which has only really just begun and isn't necessarily fatal at this stage, could quickly become very hard for them to stop.
Yeah. And that was going to be my last question to you, actually, Chris. So this idea of whether or not he's going to be a puppet of the Sturgeonites or not, we were expecting under Sturgeon for the next general election to be treated as a de facto referendum by the SNP. Is he going to go through with that strategy or not?
No, I don't think he will. I think they saw the policy was unpopular within the SNP, but also deeply unpopular within the country, which didn't like the idea of being railroaded into voting for one thing in a general election, which is obviously about many things. There might be a sort of version of it, which is give us the support for, you know, independence at the top of their manifesto, give us the support for that, and we will go into a Holyrood election, perhaps demanding a referendum. They'll no doubt demand a referendum if they do well in the next general election. But if they fall back in that election, which I think is likely a bit anyway in the general election, then that will take the edge off that argument a bit. If they're not, the thing about the SNP is they're like a shark. They've always got to be moving forward, always eating new things, always growing. And when that stops happening, the only way really is backwards. And it's very hard to make the case for a referendum, which hasn't been granted so far, if you're actually on the downturn. So that will be difficult for them. I think they're probably looking more to the next Holyrood election now. But again, if they fall back there and if Labour are able to win back seats and be in a position to properly hold them to account by being close-ish in numbers, that's going to make it very difficult for the SNP to say that there's public demand for a referendum. This is why I think a lot of people, including me, have been saying that the moment for independence is gone for now. We've had nothing but moments for independence over the last 8 years. We've had Brexit, we've had Boris Johnson, hugely unpopular Tory government, a cost of living crisis. None of this has pushed support for independence up. As things have started to change, an SNP party in government for 16 years sense that they might have run their course at this point. I don't think, despite what the independentistas say, that there is really much appetite for carrying on down this route of constantly hammering away at the need for a referendum. It's almost an approach of diminishing returns by this stage. So they need to be clever. I think they need to go away and govern, and this is if they're given the opportunity, go away and govern properly, think hard about reforming public services, concentrate on the economy, show some uptick in these things over a period of time. It could be as long as a decade, because it takes a long time to reform public services and to get an economy up on its feet and persuade people that you're doing what needs to be done. And at that point, you can say, look how well we've done within the constraints of devolution. Imagine what we could do with independence. But that can't be done in a year or 2 years or probably even 5 years. And whether the party has the patience for that and whether the electorate is willing to give them that much more time to change the way they're going to approach it while still in government, I'm not sure. We'll see what happens in the coming years, but certainly Labour, they've got their tails up. Keir Starmer has been up, I think, every week for the past 4 weeks. You can't move for a shadow cabinet minister up from London in a constituency that Labour are keen to win back. If you go to the central belt, you'll find Wes Streeting or you'll find any of the others, and often Keir Starmer. And I don't think they're going to let up on that because they can sense the opportunity. And that sense of momentum, inevitability towards independence that Sturgeon always argued was there, I think that's gone. And I think Labour want to drive home the point that that's gone. And if that becomes received wisdom amongst the Scottish electorate, it makes their Labour Party's job of taking seats for the sake of better government an easier sell.
That's so interesting. Thanks so much, Chris. And I'm sure we'll have you back soon to assess Hamza Yousaf's first early days as First Minister. Thanks.
Indeed. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to submit a question for us to discuss on a future podcast, you can do so at newstatesman.com/youaskus. You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast with me, Anoosh Kellyan, and our Scotland editor, Chris Deering. Follow us on your podcast app to make sure you get new episodes as soon as they're released. You can also watch video from this podcast on our YouTube channel. Just search YouTube for the New Statesman. We're produced by Adrian Bradley.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Freddie here. I want to tell you about a new way you can support the New Statesman's independent journalism. Every morning I send out Morning Call, our daily newsletter covering everything you need to know about British politics. It's free to sign up, plus for just £3 a month, you'll get a recommended daily piece of ours sent to you in full, plus exclusive polling analysis from Ben Walker, a weekly update from Will Dunn, and our featured piece on Sundays. If you enjoy this podcast, you'll love Morning Call. Head to morningcall.substack.com and subscribe now.